Welcome everybody to Art of Advisory, and today we'll be talking about the word choice, or the choices that we make on the words or the speech that we use in our engagements with our clients. Hey, Kirk, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Hector?
I am busy. Very, very busy.
Oh yeah, it's that non-existent tax season.
I thought you were going to criticize my word choice.
Well, I could. I mean, you know I hate the word busy, but you know, it's funny. Now that we've talked about this on previous episodes, whenever I hear an accountant or a bookkeeper say they're busy, speaking of word choice, what I immediately hear is it's tax season. And you know how much I hate people calling it tax season, because I think if you run your business, your practice well, you would plan for that, right? But yeah, you're busy. I hate the word busy too, right? I think, isn't there a deal where you shouldn't say busy? We busy makes us think we're doing something or we're important, or, you know, there's something against, you know, if I had answered, if you asked me that question and I answer, I'm not busy, I'm just hanging around.
You know, I think we're afraid of giving an answer like that because maybe we're scared that by saying we're hanging around, we are the opposite, not important, not desired, not wanted, not productive. But I'm sure you got something to say about this. What, you know, you're not an accountant. So obviously, you know, you don't prescribe to this whole tax season being super busy, busier than ever type of thing. How do you feel when you go speak to someone that you're about to have a 10, 20 minute conversation and the conversation starts with, I'm busy? Like, what does that make you feel right off the bat?
Well, I think there is some weight or baggage attached to that word busy. And probably one of the things that runs through my mind is, well, are they going to listen to what I'm saying? Do they have attention span available to actually hear what I'm saying and hear the meaning? Or sometimes, wow, am I interrupting them? Is this, you know, am I somehow, there's some kind of negative connotation that I reached out to them and they're busy, and so maybe I shouldn't have done that?
You know, one of the interesting things that happened to me now during tax season, because everybody knows that it's tax season, when my clients call me and I answer the phone. So obviously answering the phone, it's an important signal, right? I'm answering the phone. That means I'm ready to talk to you. But a lot of these people and my clients, dear friends of mine, the first thing that they say is, hi, Hector, I know you're busy, but I have a question for you. So at the beginning, you know, when I was a bit more cynic and I'm sort of growing out of that cynic stage, I was like, well, if he's acknowledging that I'm busy, why are they calling me? That was my first thought. But as I'm evolving as a professional, I realized that simply what they're trying to do is saying, hey, I'm aware that I'm just trying to be respectful of my time, but I do have something important to say. Now, the trick is at that point, I say, go ahead. Or do I say, I'm absolutely never busy for you? You know, think about how much does it cost you, you know, just to say four words, five words, instead of, like, I used to say, yeah, okay, go ahead, make it quick. Yeah, I got 5 minutes, you know, versus saying, I absolutely have all the time for you. Tell me what you need. So I think at first I never said that or was never willing to say that because I wanted to acknowledge that I am in fact busy, that they are right. I am busy, and therefore I don't want to lower, quote unquote, a stature, you know, that the client gave me by saying, hey, I know you're busy. Give me 5 minutes, please. You know, think about, you know, the context of that conversation. If you just say, I have all the time for you. Tell me what can I do for you? And that's it. You know, like, it just, I think it also lowers the whole anxiety level, because if the client starts with, hey, I know you're busy, but I have a question, you know that they're probably going to ask the question half, you know, halfway there, or, you know, or too quick, or maybe the worst thing is expect an immediate answer. And the problem is when both of you set yourself up under that busy mode, you know, the client saying, I know you're busy, so I'm going to ask you a quick question so you can give me a quick answer. And the accountant or the professional saying, yes, I acknowledge that I'm busy, so I'm going to give you a quick answer so I can move on with my day. How is that engagement going to be, one, something that adds value, and two, something that actually sends the client on the right path? I mean, don't you think that's a good way to think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think ideally as a customer, you want a professional who's available. And I think part of this idea of I'm busy comes out of this idea that we feel like we're not important unless we're doing something. And that probably also comes out of this, unfortunately, professional history of the last 100 years of tracking our time, right? So, you know, we're always talking about, you know, I'm not, but, you know, a lot of people in the profession are, you know, what'd I do with this 6 minutes? What'd I do with the last 10 minutes, et cetera. The idea that, you know, if I'm doing something, then I must be productive. And I'll be honest, right? I have sometimes done an incredible amount in 5 minutes, and then for the next 5 hours, I don't accomplish a darn thing. So the idea that, you know, doing something equals value or equals something of worth, that's also, you know, a word choice. One of the things I don't like is when somebody says, thank you for your time. Okay. Because in my opinion, as I just said, I can do a lot in a short amount of time and do nothing in a long amount of time, or vice versa. The time it takes is irrelevant. It's the result that I'm after. And so I've tried to get in the habit of saying, okay, thank you for your knowledge. Thank you for your insight. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for your attention. Something like that, something that I think is more valuable. Because to me, I don't feel like the time itself is, number one, what I'm offering them, or number two, what is valuable. So, you know, this episode is all about word choice. It's about language, and the words that we choose matter. Right. And so that is just one. And it's interesting. Where I first caught myself on this, I was actually interviewing Tim Williams on my podcast. And at the end,
one of my heroes, by the way,
Tim said, I think Tim said, or maybe I said it, I have to go back and listen, but one of us said, thank you for your time. And I just, at that moment, I said, you know, I don't like to thank people for their time. And so we got into a discussion about it. And it's so common in our language that we say, thank you for your time. It has taken a lot of effort on my part to train myself out of it. But I have found it is worth the effort, because words matter.
Right. And in every meeting, one-on-one or group meeting, there are three components. There's presence, there's time, and then there's attention. Okay. You know, if somebody's present and there for the whole hour, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have the full attention, right? It's kind of like me when I'm forced to go to church. I'm physically there and I spend the hour, but I'm not paying much attention. I'm kind of like a kid when it comes to that. But when you start a meeting by saying, thank you for coming, or thank you for being here, you're not really thanking them for what you want, which is you want their attention. So when you say, thank you for your undivided attention, or thank you for coming here to get into a deep discussion about problem X, Y, and Z with me so we can come up with a solution, you set the pace right there and then that you're here to interact, that you're here to be present, but mentally present, which is what we call attention. And I see you smirking. I know some people listen to this in a podcast, so they don't get that. So you're either going to comment something about my last comment, or maybe you're thinking about what to say. But that's the thing, you know. Kirk and I, we both are present in our desks doing this. We are both spending an hour every week doing this. So we are appreciative of each other's presence and time. But the most valuable thing that we get out of this podcast is the undivided attention we have with each other for the conversation. And I think that when we pay close attention to what every single person says, in one word, like a couple episodes ago, I said something like, there's a difference between unsolicited advice versus unwelcome advice. And you said, I'm glad you said unwelcome advice. Let's dive deep into that. So when you pick up in one word or one phrase that the other person says, and you use it to continue the conversation, the other person gets extremely engaged, and you're going to be much more effective at having that conversation.
One of the things that we should be aware is, not only is word choice important for communication between two people, in other words, the words I choose to use in my sentences, etc., with you affect how you perceive the meaning I'm trying to communicate. But there's a second role that I think is actually more important, because when I say certain words, it conveys a certain mindset to me. And that mindset is not something the other person can easily pick up on. It's not like you can read my mind, although my wife claims she can. It's not something that is immediately obvious. You may be able to pick it up through body language if you're able to see the other person. So you and I can pick up on body language right now because we're doing this via video. Although you can't pick up on my entire body language, right? Because you've just got me from, you know, the shoulders up. But word choice starts with what's in our mind. How do we perceive what we're saying? Because that is communicated. It's just subtle. And the other person picks up on it. And a lot of times they pick up on it subconsciously rather than consciously. But it has a big impact. And I'll give you an example. You'd asked me as we were doing our show prep, you said, well, what's one of the words that's really important to you about word choice? And I said, well, I cannot stand the word client. And here's why. So I just put the word client into Google to bring up a couple of definitions. And here's a couple of the definitions for client. The first one, and it's not the first one listed, but one of the definitions is anyone under the patronage of another, a dependent. So there's this idea that a client would be dependent upon the professional. The other definition that I came across was one under the protection of another, which also kind of is that similar concept, just with different words. The word client, to me, the history of the word, it kind of comes out of this idea of, you know, servitude back in kind of the Middle Ages, where, you know, you would have a lord, a landowner, and the people living on the land would farm it, and then they would have to, you know, take some of their crop and pay it to the landlord, the landowner, basically as rent. And so that word kind of comes out of that history. And so this idea of this dependence, it's to me, it doesn't represent the true relationship that I want to have with a customer. And I prefer the word customer, because I want it to not be a relationship where one is over another or one is dependent on another. I want it to be a relationship that is mutual, where you both benefit from the relationship and you're working together in partnership. And so I prefer the word customer over the word client. I also hate the word client because it's so tied to hourly billing, which, as you know, I can't stand. That word choice is, again, something that I had to be very diligent about getting out of my vocabulary. And I rarely say it other than when I'm describing why I can't stand it. But it took a long time for me to get to the point where I could say that is completely removed from my vocabulary. Is there a word that really drives you nuts that you kind of have a similar feeling about?
Yeah. One of the words that I really don't like, and it's not that I don't like when clients use it, is I don't like when I use it. Just because I've been learning and watching people's reaction to it. And I've become very keen of this word, which is the word complicated. Okay. Or complex. So let me explain what I mean. So I do a lot of inventory consulting, inventory system setups, accounting systems with inventory. And it's almost every client has a really unfeasible expectation of what they want the inventory to do magically by itself, right? Because the inventory has feet and makes decisions and all that stuff. And the capabilities of one consultant or two consultants and a very small business with maybe 2-3 employees and a small budget to not buy a software that can do a whole bunch. So these clients have this really sort of, and I don't want to say use the word complex, but they have this intricate idea of what they want the inventory system to do. And they put it up in the table saying, this is what I expect it to do. I used to say, well, you know, that's, you know, implementing that is very complicated. And this could be also my problem with, you know, just poor choice of words. And the immediate reaction was like, oh, you know, because the word complicated to someone could mean that person doesn't know That's why he's using the word complicated. Or that person is putting up some walls or some barriers around it, and he's going to try to, you know, steer me away from this without really understanding what I want. Or that person is just, you know, not understanding what I'm saying. You know, so there's a couple of, so I think there's a couple of choices you can use, you know, because there's many cases when I used to say the word complicated, it wasn't because I didn't understand or because I didn't know. What I really meant to say, that it's going to be a process that's highly involved, that is going to require a ton of discipline and a lot of planning and resources put in play to see that work the way you're picturing it, you know, within a couple of weeks of us, you know, in baby steps, adapting, you know, new features into the software and your process and training everybody, educating everybody in the company to use it and monitoring the results, et cetera, et cetera. But that is such a long way to say, you know, hey, it's complicated. So I used to resort to just saying it's complicated. And now I'm just very careful not to say the word complicated, although I really mean it. I mean that what they're asking us to do, it's a highly involved process. So I say the word involved. I say the word requires discipline. And I say the word, or the word or the expression is that we're gonna implement step by step until we get to where you want to be. So I've had to make my conversations a little bit longer in order to take the word complicated out of my vocabulary, because I honest to my heart, I want to say it's complicated because it is. It is the first reaction that I get when the clients ask for this whole process filled with layers, and they have 3 employees and a budget of a couple thousand bucks, and it's just very difficult to pull off. And I'm sure, Kirk, when you were developing database and developing software, you have some clients ask you for something that is, again, I don't want to use the word complicated, but it has a whole bunch of moving parts, and the client, it just doesn't feel to you that the client is ready to be there yet. They're asking for too much with too little time, budget, discipline, intention, all that stuff. So what do you think about that? Like, what other words come to mind when you're trying to say something is complicated, but you're trying to use sort of the positive or the more assertive side of that word?
One of the things that a client may hear, a customer, see, I just did it, right? I just used the word client when I meant to use the word customer. See how hard this is, Hector? I'm joking. Yeah. but a customer, one of the things they hear when you say complicated a lot of times is expensive. And ultimately, the amount of effort it takes for us is irrelevant, especially when you price based on value, not based on time or inputs. So I agree with you. Don't like the word complicated. Sometimes customers will have either unrealistic expectations, or, as you said, for certain reasons, they're not ready to go to where they want to go. It could be a budget limitation. It could be a personnel limitation. It could be other resource limitations, etc. There could be, and so there's often a very real reason why they're not ready to go there. But that's one of the things that occurred to me about complex or complicated, is it could carry the expectation. There could be a association to price, especially if a client's coming, which a lot of them do, and I did it again, a customer's coming from a viewpoint of effort and time. But you asked me another word, so let me unpack another one. I definitely prefer the word price, speaking of this idea of how expensive something is. I prefer the word price. I don't like the word fee, charge, bill, etc. So, for example, I have really disciplined myself with customers to say the price for this will be, or we'll have a discussion and then I'll send you the price, the scope of work and the price. Try to avoid saying the fee for that will be, the charge for that will be. Definitely don't want to say I'll bill you. We believe that pricing is done up front in advance, billing is done in arrears. So in other words, I can give a customer a price before the engagement starts and they can make a buying decision. With billing, we don't have an exact idea, a precise idea of what the price is going to be. So we do the work and then we go, okay, here's your bill, right? So a bill's done after the fact. by the way, part of this is not just word choice, but the psychology. So I'm trying to use George W. Bush's vocabulary, right? What was the word? Strategery, psychology. No, psychology, this idea that a service, an outcome is most valuable to the customer before you engage. And so I want to set a price at the time that it's most valuable to them. And that's just, it's something that we know is human behavior. That's the way the human psychology works. So price. And again, I gave several reasons. And ideally, when we choose our words, we want to be able to explain to ourselves why that word choice over another. And I've given a couple of examples already, the word customer over client, the word price over something like fee or billing, and there are others. What's another one from your list?
Okay, I wanted to go back to the word expensive, but I want to take a different spin at that, Kirk. And you said the word resources, and I think that could be something that we think about. So when you think about professional services, and this is a reality of things, like, Kirk, what I do, you can do. What you do, I can do, right? We were not born with any special, skill set. We learned that. What our customers want us to do, technically, they could do. So we have to understand, why is the customer going to a professional? They're going to a professional because for them, it's better to pay a little bit more money. They're talking about money specifically, to pay more money and invest less of their time learning by outsourcing or having someone that has done it before, that knows how to do it, that can do it right, that can do it better than them, that can do it faster than them. So when you think about the word expensive, I think most customers have two sides of them. The side of them that is obviously protecting their wallet, and because they assume that everything has an alternative, right? That every single person out there that gives you a price, there's an alternative, another person that can do the same for less. Because of that notion, people will bring up it to their, from their subconscious to their conscious, okay, this is expensive, right? But in theory, everything that you have somebody else do is expensive because the alternative is free, right? Yep. Almost everything that anybody does, I mean, except for surgery, I probably couldn't do surgery on myself. I could try, but won't be very successful. I'll be by my one surgery. That's it. There's a whole bunch of things, probably the vast majority of things that people do with their hands, with their brain, someone else can do, or your customers can do. So everything that they hire, by definition, is expensive because the alternative is free. So when somebody is starting to use the word expensive, that's expensive, you have to acknowledge right away that they're using a word that they're using to compare their out-of-pocket costs with what they're getting in return. And if a customer is using the word expensive, that means that you're doing a really bad job, and this is an extremely important key word, that you're doing a bad job at understanding what the client wants and how to frame what they want into a solution, right? Or a potential solution. So then, and you understanding how much it's worth to them, and you understanding what they think the alternative is worth, for you to be able to start talking about pricing, which is why, it's one of the reasons why you hate the word rate, right? Because the rate, it's a number that gets multiplied by a different number. And the second number that you multiply it by, which is usually time, it's extremely subjective. If I happen to hire if a customer wants to hire me to implement inventory for, let's say, a medicine type of company that the medicine expires every 2 months, and I just came back from 6 months of working with two customers of that exact same project using the same software, similar product, I am probably going to do that in a much faster time than I did the second customer, and much, much faster than I did the first customer. So taking a rate and multiplying times time, and where that particular time is completely arbitrary to the specific person or company that you're hiring, their experience, their mood, the tools that they have. I mean, there's so many factors, which is, I think, that one of the reasons why you hate that word rate. But again, the word expensive, to me, it's a word that is a lot. It's very telling about the shape of your conversation. Now, in contrast, there are customers that will sit down with you the first time, and they could probably start the conversation with, "I'm looking for a professional that's not too expensive," and that's a whole nother situation, because you really did nothing to spark that feeling that you're expensive or not. They're basically telling you that they're price choppers. And you know what? I've had clients that started with that, and I give them a price and they pay for it because I don't know what expensive means to them. Right? I mean, that's another really important point. We have no clue what expensive means to anyone. A person that's starting up that has a budget of $2,000 to start up the whole business, a $300 1 hour, you know, engagement with me, like a sort of like a one-time fee, you know, to discover that I charge $350, that may be astronomical because that's, you know, 30% of their budget, 20% of their budget, right? But a person that it's just fired the last person because they paid them $10,000 and they got them nothing, and you're going to charge them, let's say, $350 just to hear their solutions and give them some options, that may be extremely inexpensive to them. So assuming that the word expensive means the same to you that it means to your client, it's a complete fallacy, which is why I think the word expensive is it's a word that we don't need to psychoanalyze, but we have to make sure that we are paying attention to the environment and what is causing, and in what timing in your conversation is that word coming out. I think the alternative for you to use, so you preemptively don't allow the customer to use the word expensive, is to talk about resources. Is to say, you know, you have resources, I have resources. I have my tools, my team, my knowledge. That's my resource. You have your tools, yourself, your team, your knowledge. Let's have a conversation about which of my resources and which of your resources are going to be used, what that timeline looks like, so then we can talk about price. So that's a really important thing to bring out into the open, I think, early in the conversation. So that, because once the client says the word expensive, it's very difficult for you to come back from. Because the client, and that's the other important thing about words, it's people commit, most people commit to their own words. You know, once they said something, it's very hard for them to backtrack. So for you to try to convince someone that you're not expensive after they evoked the word expensive is going to make it challenging. So you almost have to be a wordsmith and a word artist to make sure that you don't say what could trigger the word expensive from your client. I don't know if you feel the same way, but do you have another word or something similar that you want to discuss?
Just a couple thoughts on the word expensive. When I hear that, what I remind myself of is a lot of times what the customer really means is it sounds like a price objection, right? But really what it is it's a value objection. Now, there are some customers that are truly price shoppers. They will literally switch from one person to another for $5 cheaper. But a lot of times when a customer says expensive, I want to ask them to explain what that means, because the same word, and this really is what's driving a lot of this episode, is the fact that a single word can convey very different meanings to two different people. And it can do that without them ever realizing that it means one thing to one person and one thing to another. So one of the ways that I will try to dive into that is I'll say, well, tell me what expensive means, or what is expensive to you? And not all the time, but a lot of the time, what I'll find is what customers then go into is not, well, this number would be okay, this number wouldn't be okay. They go into something that describes the value they're seeking out of it. It could be response time. It could be quality. It could be the outcome they're seeking. There are a variety of things that would factor into that. So I actually don't see that as an objection. I see it as an opportunity. And this is, again, a perception of the word expensive to the professional. When a customer says that, it's actually an opportunity for you to get more information. And so rather than, you know, I don't want somebody who's too expensive, rather than your first reaction being, oh my goodness, another one of those, I see it as an opportunity to go, well, tell me what expensive means to you, or something along that line, an open-ended question that allows the customer to unpack that. And a lot of times in our value conversations, which was our last episode, what we're really trying to do as part of that is to understand terminology. We're trying to come to common meanings in software, particular companies that I work with a lot. A lot of times we are helping create technology that will help them take a manual process and automate it. We will see a lot of times they'll be using words in a synonymous fashion. And we always try to bring that up and say, for example, they might be using the word project and the word job. And I will say, hold on, which word do you prefer? And why do they mean the same to you? Or sometimes I'll hear customers use two words and they think they're saying the same thing. And I'll have to point out, wait, those really aren't the same thing. And so I really try, just as I have in our conversation, you noticed a couple times earlier where I used the word client and I didn't want to, I winced. I try to help make the customer aware of the word choice that they're making. Obviously, you do this in a diplomatic way, right? We're not the grammar police. But I think establishing good definitions, common definitions, and understanding for words is key to mutual understanding. Mutual understanding is key to realistic and accurate expectations. And that's really, I think, ultimately what this whole discussion of word choice is about expectations. And if you want to have realistic expectations, then you have to have a vocabulary that's mutual.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great point. If you look at contracts, okay? Most contracts start with, okay, who are the parties involved, right? So we have party A, party B, and usually there's at least two parties, but sometimes there's a third party that's affected by this, or maybe the third party brings in a condition, or maybe the third party approves something or doesn't approve something, right? Like there are contracts between a contractor and a subcontractor in which they list a third party like the government saying, hey, the government will give us a go ahead and then we'll be able to pay you, that sort of thing. So contracts tend to define the parties involved. They define the services, right? They define, because again, accounting, the word accounting service to me, well, I'm a little bit involved with that because I know that means many things, but to the person that's not an accountant, to go to an accountant and said, hey, can you do my accounting? You know, that could mean anything, right? So you almost have to like say, okay, great. I'm an accountant, so I can definitely do your accounting. Let's break this down. Okay, accounting means these 10 different things. Out of these 10 different things, which three mean the most to you? And then you start from there. And I think just throwing the words out there and defining them, and as you said, and this happens to me all the time, by the way, this is a very common thing of QuickBooks consultants. I'm a QuickBooks consultant. When the customers use a word like my customer, my job, my project, actually, it's funny you mentioned it. We actually have to stop the client and say, all right, let me write this down. What is the definition of a project? What is the definition of a customer? What is the definition of a job? And these things are important because then you're going to use that language to set up the scope, to set the expectation. Okay. So I think that was really great that you mentioned that. Now I want to mention something else, and I just wanted to run this by you, Kirk. I heard this in a podcast and I thought it was pretty interesting, and I'm starting to implement it. I actually used it with an employee a couple of days ago. Is instead of asking yes, no questions, which is going to galvanize the person to a position. And as I mentioned before, once somebody gives an answer, most of the times just out of pride and consistency, they won't change that answer. So I thought this was a pretty slick way of being able to get an answer without committing to the answer. So are you ready for this, Kirk? Okay. So instead of asking you a question that's going to give me a yes, no answer. So for example, I could use an extremely polarizing question that has nothing to do with business. Like I would ask you something, and this is very relevant to the times. Like, you know, do you think we should have guns in school? Yes or no? No, don't answer that. Now, the problem with that answer is that no matter what, 50% of the population will love that answer and 50% will hate that answer. And the problem is it's not going to get you anywhere. So when you, instead of asking, hey, do you love this? Yes or no. Do you like this idea? Yes or no. You say, this is the idea. Do you think it's underrated or overrated? And I think what's interesting about asking overrated or underrated is that you're actually, look, you have a yes and you have a no. But underrated and overrated are both somewhere in the middle, right? One, you know, one leaning towards one side, one leaning towards the other. And it allows for you not to have complete closure over whether this is going to be a yes answer or no answer. So I'm going to just use an example of work. And I used a polarizing question just to use the example of when you can use it, you know, like something like, you know, being faithful, overrated, underrated. You don't have to attack someone on whether they believe in a religion or not. You can just say overrated, underrated, and it would evoke a very open answer. But like, for example, in my work, I ask things like, you know, delegating tasks to employees that are sensitive to financial, you know, to you know, with financial information. Do you believe that's an underrated or overrated idea? And then the client will go, huh, well, I think it's a little bit underrated because it would be great to do that, but I think the problem would be this, this, and that. But if you ask, do you think we should do this, yes or no, they have to take a position. And if they say, no, I don't want my employee to have sensitive financial information, and they've picked a position. And then during your engagement, you may realize that it's extremely valuable for you to give, you know, delegate that task to that employee. But unfortunately, now you have to attack something that the customer from the beginning said, no, it's not a good idea. So the idea is to answer, to ask yes and no questions that are, that in the case that that's what you want, maybe you don't want a yes and no answer. You just want an answer to get a feel for where they are, get the reasons why, without both of you having to commit to a yes or a no. What do you think about that?
Another way that you could approach the same thing is asking a customer to rate something on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yep.
Ultimately, whether it's the technique of, you know, do you feel like that's underrated, overrated, or rating from 1 to 10 or 1 to 5, it's getting away from an closed question, a yes or no question, you know, a binary question for those of us that are into technology, a 1 or a 0. We're getting into a question that asks the customer to express an opinion in the vocabulary, in their vocabulary of degree. Because a lot of the things that we have to interpret as part of working with a customer are, we have to make judgments about degree. Our judgment of what the customer says, I mean, anytime anyone says anything, right now, as I am communicating with you, you are making decisions about my word choice. You're making decisions about the meaning I'm conveying. Even though I might mean one thing, you may hear it another, because ultimately, you're not me and you don't have my thoughts. I'm trying to convey my thoughts via the words, but ultimately it requires action on your part to interpret what I'm saying. And when you ask the customer to describe something in degree, you're getting much more depth and much more insight into how they're interpreting the words in their own mind. And so this idea of asking them to describe in degree, one of the things that a mutual friend of ours, Ed Kless, when he has taught on questioning, if a customer says something, a technique he'll use is, and let's just use, the customer says, I want a CRM system, customer relationship management. It'll say something like, well, I've worked with a lot of different customers and I found that CRM means different things to different people. Do you mind if I ask you some questions about what CRM means to you? Now, that's one of those kind of polite rhetorical questions that nobody is going to say no to that. But number one, you kind of opened up the idea that, hey, this may, you know, it sounds like, you know, customer relationship management, that ought to be pretty straightforward, right? No, not really. It that can be a big variation and we need to dig into it. So you've put that on the table. You've asked for permission to explore it. And then the next thing that you would say after they say yes would be, well, tell me what CRM means to you.
Right. No, absolutely. The other thing, and I'm also going to quote the same person, Ed Kless. I heard him in a podcast say something really, really interesting. So he was talking to the author of a book by the name of Peter Block, who wrote a book called Flawless Consulting. And in the book itself, Peter Block describes that a consultant, an advisor, whatever you want to call yourself, a professional, an accountant, has to be in one of three roles. Like there are three ways that you can work with a client. And this is labeling yourself as your role in the relationship. One is a pair of hands, and I'll explain them. So one is a pair of hands. The other one is an expert. And the third one is a collaborator. So a pair of hands is, you're going to be there. You're going to physically be there, presently be there, or be ready to receive instructions from your customer so you can do stuff for them, right? So your contract labor, let's call it that, a pair of hands. The other one is an expert. Now, an expert could be someone that gives advice, someone that gives a rating to their performance, someone that says, I think you're on the right track, not on the right track, or someone that knows the subject, you know, like a lawyer would do, and give advice on the law. Like that's what mostly most consultants, accountants, lawyers, they fall that sort of expert area, or that's what they want to be anyway. And then the third one is a collaborator. Collaborator means that we both figure out what we can do together, right, as a team, right, a customer consultant, instead of just you telling me what to do and me doing it for you, or me just kind of guiding you from the outside, telling you what you should be doing. Now, the challenge with, and I think Ed Kless asked him this question. He says, well, the challenge is that you're labeling yourself one of the three. And the problem is that, you know, life is a little bit more nuanced than that. Maybe you're not one of the three. Maybe you're all three in some way, shape, or form. Or maybe you're leaning towards two. So what Ed asked him is, you know, what if we take that same framework and we draw a triangle? So imagine you draw a triangle and you write the three words, right? Pair of hands. After you explain it, you pair of hands, expert, collaborator, and you tell the client, draw a dot, and I thought this was genius, a great way for Ed to visualize this. Draw a dot, where do you feel I should be, or where what my role should be? And then it just kind of, it puts the three positions in there, and then the customer would, in some cases, will draw a dot right in the corner of one of the labels, and it will tell you right up the bat, this is the relationship that I want you to have with me. You put a word on it, you put a label on it, or maybe somewhere in the middle, gearing towards two of them, right? Or gearing towards one particular, gearing towards two of them. So that allows you to, you know, begin the conversation saying, okay, so you want me to be a little bit of a pair of hands, and also you want me to be a little bit of an expert. What does that mean? In what situations you want me to be a pair of hands, and what situation you want me to be an expert, or whatever the situation may be. So I think that the word choice of using, of taking the three roles, defining them, and also using it's like a scale, but because it's a triangle, you have to choose either that middle, one particular, or in between two, right? I hope you can picture it. I know it's kind of hard just by thinking about it, but I think that it's an excellent way to start a conversation. It's an excellent choice of words, and you know the word expert, you can switch it with something else. Like, you want me to just be a consultant? You want me to just be an observer, you want me to just report, whatever. But just pick three roles that define or give you an opportunity to define the relationship with your customer, and have your client not answer with the word, answer with the visualization on where is it closest to. Kind of like I thought about that when you're talking about the 1 to 10 scale.
Even the word consultant has, in the past for me, been a word that I hated. Because the first time I heard somebody define the word consultant, it was, and I can't remember exactly, but it was something along the lines of basically somebody who's unemployed that has an opinion. That was kind of the first definition I heard of consultant. I was like, gosh, that, you know, I hate that. And then I guess I started studying consulting, reading books on it, and kind of following other people that, you know, had strong consulting practices, and I came to where now the word consultant is a badge of honor for me, right? I feel like what consultants do are extremely valuable. I feel like consulting is something that is hard to do well, and so there's always a constant challenge to do it well, to do it with excellence on my part. It is something that I'm, you know, it's a utopia that you're constantly getting closer to, but you never reach. It's a journey. And I see it as a profession. Although consulting is, you know, it's not a regulated profession like being a CPA or a doctor or an attorney is. That's a word that I now use it very frequently and very proudly, but I used to use it, I used to avoid it. Like somebody would call me a consultant or ask me a consultant, and I would try to say, no, I'm not one of those guys. I'm not an unemployed guy with an opinion, right? And this brings to the point that your discussion of, you know, pair of hands, expert, collaborator, part of setting expectations, which again, as I said earlier, I think is probably one of the most important things that this whole discussion of word choice and meaning and communication gets to, is understanding what are the customer's expectations. And so as I'm visiting with a customer, well, what if I say the word consultant and I think it's proud, what do they think of the word consultant? Does it have a negative opinion to them? Am I using a word that I think is awesome that they think sucks? And right. So every time I say it, I'm going, yeah, I'm a consultant, baby. And they're going, oh, he's a consultant. Oh, my goodness. You know, it. You want to find that out. And that's part of what you're exploring. And that's why this idea of, well, what does that mean to you? Do you mind tell me?
Right. And I was going to piggyback on that, the word bookkeeper, right? That's one of the words that I got to tell you, as a person, as a former bookkeeper, as a person that quit his day job to start a company called Quick Bookkeeping that started doing only exclusively bookkeeping services. And bookkeeping services was or is, according to the name of my company, the livelihood of what we do. I personally respect bookkeepers and bookkeeping. I do it. But can you find someone, a small business owner, that would have, or can you find two or three business owners that have the same definition of the word bookkeeping? And it absolutely does not. You know, for someone, a bookkeeper is a person that pushes paper. For someone, a bookkeeper could be a data entry person. For someone, a bookkeeper could be their lifeline, the one that holds control over their money and tells them where everything is. For someone that has had three bad bookkeepers would have a bad perception of what a bookkeeper is. For someone that had an accountant that said, I hate bookkeeping, that could also set the pace wrong. For someone that had a superstar bookkeeper that did a whole bunch of things that beyond what a bookkeeper does, they're also going to have the expectation that if you're going to be the bookkeeper or do the bookkeeping, that's going to have that. So I think defining what bookkeeping means before you enter into a bookkeeping engagement is one of the most important things on any engagement that an accountant, and I know that in my perspective is very narrow because I'm an accountant, I'm a bookkeeper, that's what I do, but that's really the message I want to portray. It just comes from my perspective. So if you are running into a customer that potentially does not see the word bookkeeping as something positive, or maybe it's not a positive or negative thing, you know, underrated, overrated. Maybe it's not that. Maybe it's just a perception they have. Maybe you want to steer away from calling yourself a bookkeeper unless you're ready to back it up and explain it and add all the value and bring up the value of the word bookkeeper. Or maybe you want to use a different word that's unique. Maybe you want to say, hey, my job is to make sure that your books are in order so you can completely forget about it and concentrate in what you do best. You know, I know that's a lot longer than saying I'm a bookkeeper, but it does speak to what a bookkeeper can do, the possibilities of what good bookkeeping can do. You know, we interviewed someone in one of the pre-recorded episodes. I don't remember who it is, but we were talking about the concept of clean books and how that accountant actually didn't charge for bookkeeping. They only charged for advisory and consulting. Bookkeeping was free. So that accountant is actually almost discounting the value of bookkeeping from the perspective of the client, not allowing the client to use their perception of how much bookkeeping is worth. Although he told us, that was Andrew Berg actually, that episode will air soon, that's a pre-recorded episode. He told us that bookkeeping was the most important thing in his practice. Like without clean books, absolutely no advice could be done. But in the engagement, it was totally discounted as something that was really not worth anything, or it was included for free with their advisory engagement. So it's interesting that advisory is actually the easiest thing that I do. Like, all I have to do is look at the financial statements that are correct, right? The bookkeeping, talk to the client for an hour. I probably can help them or guide them through my ideas about their challenges. Right? That's actually easy job, easy work, and extremely, you know, profitable if you were to, you know, discount it out to an hourly rate or something like that. But bookkeeping is the real uncertainty, right? It's a lot of labor, a lot of work, a lot of documents. So I think using those labels like accounting, bookkeeping, advisory in my profession right away and defining them or have a conversation about defining them, it's crucial, because otherwise the conversation, it just goes in a completely different direction if two people have a different definition of something like the word bookkeeper or like the word consultant, as you mentioned.
And I think if we have to choose between defining words or understanding what a word means to a customer, what, in other words, what experience, history, context do they bring to a word when you say it, what comes up in their mind? I would rather have the latter. I would rather understand the context that's in their mind. I have got to a point where if I need to be able to use the word project with one customer in one context and use it with a different customer in another context, I can do that. I would rather, now, ideally, I'd love to have a set of words that we all understand what they mean and they have universal context, but, you know, again, this is not utopia, so that's never going to happen. Ultimately, what you need to do really through this idea of word choice and definitions is get to what is the customer's context. And then if the context is one that's negative or that is one that requires some education, then provide that education and collaborate on it. For example, sometimes where the issue of the word job versus project comes up, I'll say, well, would you be open to discussing what the word project or job means and the idea that maybe in our discussion, it only means this? Or could we agree to use, you know, sometimes I'll say, well, which word do you prefer? And I'll go, okay, well, why do you prefer it? And then if I feel like there's some education or something there, I'll go, well, could we agree that for our discussion, it means this, or to only use this one? That type of, and I call it education, with the customer of coming to that common vocabulary. Because once you understand their context, then you can understand, okay, where do we need to have a mutual meeting of the minds? And how far apart is their context from my context?
Right. And also making sure that we pair up the what questions with the why questions. You just mentioned it, right? You know, hey, what is the definition of this? Why is it important? Okay. Many times we stop at, we got the definite answer we're looking for. We got the yes, no. We got the short-term answer. Or sometimes it's a long answer. But not following up with the why that's important, I think that's really where most of the context lives, right? So if a client thinks, going back to my topic, if a client thinks bookkeeper is a negative thing, you know, what is my job? Is my job to try to redefine bookkeeping for my customer? And that could be a thing, like you're saying, I could spend my time educating, or maybe I want to find out why do they have this negative feeling towards the word bookkeeper? And if that's the case, you know, what particular experiences did they have that is causing them to feel that way? And that gives me all the context that I need to then understand how I'm going to engage with my client. So a lot of times it's either changing the what preposition of all your questions with a why, or following up all the what, where, right? Like all the, like those questions that give you that precise answer, following up with the why is this important? Or why is it important for me to pay attention to this? Why is it important for me to talk about this? Why is it important for you to get that result? Why is it important for me to keep this aware? Why is it important to include it in the engagement? Like a lot of times bringing it not just why for the sense of challenging the person's thought process. Because some folks, just the word why evokes, okay, you're asking me to justify myself, right? Because that's what the word why does. Like the word why, in some cases, people say, okay, you're asking me to justify myself. But going back, right, the word why really means let's understand together the reasons behind the facts or the reasons behind our perceptions. So coupling up, in my opinion, coupling up the what questions, anything that gives you a precise answer, you know, why is it important? Why should we talk about it? You know, bringing the word why into your conversation as part of your word choices by itself, just bringing more whys, just double the amount of whys in every conversation, and you're going to see that conversation go deeper and deeper and deeper, I think.
Agreed. Hector, anything else you want to mention on this idea of word choice, language, why it's so important, and why could you and I spend an entire hour just discussing what on the surface might seem like something very that we could handle in a very short amount of time, but we unpacked it for 60 minutes?
Oh, I think that we could do 10 hours of this. I mean, because this is why I think we came up with this topic and we were discussing it. The word choices, number one, can create the rapport and create the relationship, right? Using words that the other person understands, you know, allows you to stay in communication. Okay. Using words that the other person doesn't understand, you may think, well, I'm impressing them, right, with the big words and the technical words. But maybe you're just losing them, right? I mean, there's a fine line between someone being impressed with your wordsmithing prowess and someone saying, huh? Or is this person out of touch? Or just building skepticism, you know? You know, think about a real thing that happened. Like we had, you know, our current president used simple language that people understood. Language that connected to someone and evoked feelings, someone that no one else had done. You have someone that's clearly not a politician, be extremely successful at conveying a message by using simple words, words that stick, words that people understand. So language, it's how we build rapport as well. A lot of times you want to talk to someone that understands you, understands my industry. And sometimes using the words that they use it back with them, like job or project. Or if you're talking to someone in construction, use a word like retainage, a word that a lot of people don't use, right? In the legal profession, we use words like trust account or retainer, and we connect with our lawyer, right? So if I'm not saying that you need to use the words to impress someone, I'm saying that you need those words to connect to someone. And if you can't communicate with someone, you know, whether you're trying to use the right words or they use words that you don't understand, maybe it's just not a right fit. I mean, word choices right from the get-go, you know, could give you a really good idea of whether or not, you know, the engagement, it's a right fit. You know, and I want to wrap this up with the reasons why I think wordsmithing and word choices are important. Is because it will increase your sales. Absolutely. By using the right words, you will close more deals. It will increase your customer satisfaction because by bringing the definition of the words out into the open allows you to be more defined with your scope. And it will allow you to deepen relationships because the customers with those right words will open the doors to information that you couldn't get otherwise. By not using the right words that connect to folks. So that's really the reason why I wanted to make a big deal about that. And we could probably have a second episode on this. We can discuss what other words are, you know, more evolved. Maybe we can talk about phrases or idioms or expressions or slang. I think we can go that direction as well.
All right. Well, I look forward to our next discussion. See you in a week, Hector.
See you in a week, Kirk.